You know, when we talk about the Churban, the Gemara does something which I almost think is trivializing the Churban itself. It tells us a bunch of different stories that took place, that transpired, and all the Kamtza Bar Kamtza story, for example, where, you know, when you read the story, there's obviously a tragedy, and it could very well have been that that's the kind of story that causes everything else to happen. But nonetheless, you know, when they tell us that Sinat Chinam destroyed the temple, do Chazal really mean to say that one aspect of Sinat Chinam, that one element or one, again, I'll call it, one episode is really all that happened and that caused the destruction? So I want to go to one of the other passages in the Gemara where it mentions, and it doesn't even call it Sinat Chinam, even though I believe that it is, and I do believe that this is on a much larger macro cosmic level. And we're going to start a Gemara, again, in the same general area. It is in Gittin, Daf Nun Vav. It's the first source. And I'm taking it a little bit out of context in just a couple of words. Rabbi Tzadok Yativ Rabbi'im Shanin Betanita, Delo Lichrov Yerushalayim. That Rabbi Tzadok, for 40 years prior to the destruction, he fasted that Jerusalem not be destroyed, which means that he had a premonition. It means that he knew that something was coming and that he knew that perhaps his prayer could do something about it. One more word about Rabbi Tzadok. He's a Kohen, and here he's doing Avodah. His Avodah is prayer. It's Ta'anit, and he's trying to prevent what may well be inevitable. The Gemara then continues and tells us that there was a fellow named Abba Sikra who was the Reish Biryone to Yerushalayim. He was, for lack of a better term, we'll call him, he was the head of the ruffians. He was the head of this group, these zealots, who wanted to fight. They wanted to rebel against the Romans. So let us just pause for a second. Jerusalem is under siege. The Roman Empire is the enemy. The chances of success are someplace between minimal to none. And nonetheless, this Abba Sikra believes that this is the right, the moral, the brave. And we don't know exactly how to read this. You know, the kind of behavior we're going to later on hear about from Masada, is this the same kind of people, the same kind of attitude? We'd rather fight to the death than ever give up to our enemies. Is this something which where there's realism to it? And it would seem to me that there's really three possibilities. One possibility is to fight, engage in battle. The other possibility, based upon what the Gemara is about to tell us, is that they do have enough food. There are storehouses, and the storehouses can last for years. The siege has already taken place for years, which means the Romans could at some point also lose interest. They could find some other people to attack or some other people to conquer, and they could move on. They may deem at some point this is just not worth it. And of course, there is the third possibility. And the third possibility is, let us surrender. So it happens to be that the people on the two sides, one is Rav Yochim ben Zakkai, and not just him, by the way. It says, and the rabbis, when the Gemara talks about it. The rabbis were in favor of surrender. Abba Sikra, who is Rav Yochim ben Zakkai's nephew, it's his sister's son, he's in favor of fighting. And honestly, we don't know exactly where all the other people are. We don't know where the masses stand on this, but these are the possibilities. At some point, Rav Yochim ben Zakkai speaks to his nephew, who admits that he's lost control of the zealots, and if he even tries to say anything, he's going to be killed. And at that point, Rav Yochim ben Zakkai says, and this is in our sources on the fourth line, he writes, "Efshir dehave hatzala porta. Maybe nonetheless, we can save something. Maybe something could be salvaged." That's really a better word. Maybe something could be saved out of all of this. And the Gemara then tells the story, which I assume that most of us know. If not, you have the sources here in Hebrew and in English. He goes, if not, then he's going to try to get himself out of Jerusalem. He's smuggled out in a coffin. His two most famous students, Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yeshua, the ones who help him come out. And then he has a meeting with the leader of the Romans. And again, I'm not going into all of the details of this meeting. One of the things that he says to this fellow is that you are, in fact, king, or you're going to be king. And I do want to say one more word about this. The story is told in at least four different places, and there are differences between them. But over here, he finally comes and he meets this person who will be king. And he says, and we're taking up for the next paragraph, if I'm in fact king, what took you so long to come and pay homage to me? So he says, Biryoni de'itban lo shefkinan. The zealots among us and the ruffians, they wouldn't let me come. So then they start this discussion, which is full of symbols, and I prefer actually to read it in the English. So it's interesting that that what's in the regular font is not in the text. It's in a commentary. So understand that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was prepared to ask him not to destroy the temple, Vespasian, being said to him. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting that there is this sense of a discussion, negotiation taking place. He said, if there's a barrel of honey and a snake is wrapped around it, wouldn't they break the barrel in order to kill the snake? So therefore, this is what the Roman leader says. I have to break the barrel to get to the same ruffians, the same zealots that you speak about. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai was silent. And he's attacked for the silence. The Gemara tells us either it's Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva who apply to him a verse, and they say, that he was foolish at this moment. I am God who turns wise men backward and makes their knowledge foolish. A verse from Isaiah, from Yeshayahu. Should have said, we can take tongs, remove the snake and kill it, and leave the barrel intact. So, just to understand exactly what had just now taken place. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is a weak minority, being that he is with the rabbis and not with the zealots. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai can't fight against the Baryonim and he can't fight against the Romans. And his strategy is to try to save something. But it's interesting because over here, there is a sense that he's going to ask for Jerusalem and he's cut off and he's told that's not really a good military idea. He continues then, and finally, and I'm back in the Hebrew, Amrle, right towards three, four lines before the bottom. He says, Ella, boy minai midi de eten lach. Ask for me what you want and I'll give it to you. Amrle, he says, ten li yavne v'chachameha. Give me Yavne and its wise people. There is somewhat of a question if the wise people are there yet or they're going to get there. V'shil shilta de Rabban Gamliel. And give me, and it's not just Rabban Gamliel. Rabban Gamliel is from the royal family. And he's really asking him for, give me the household, as it were, or the shalshelet is even stronger, of Rabbi Gamliel. V'esvata de misainin le l'Rabbi Tzadok. And get me a doctor to be able to heal Rabbi Tzadok. And again on that point, kori le Rabbi Yosef, yitem Rabbi Akiva, either Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva, or maybe both, attacked him and brought the same verse, meishiv chachamim machor v'datam yisakel. It's that people don't always have the intelligence to ask for the right thing. And they said instead, they should have asked for Jerusalem to be saved. But who savar? It's not that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai never thought of this. He thought, if I ask for something so much, so if I ask for all of Jerusalem, then I won't be able to salvage anything. Which is essentially what we have over here is tragic political strategy. Of course, I described this in the very beginning as being sinat chinam. The reason why I described it that way is very simple, is that the zealots burnt down all the storehouses. There's no food left. They had food to last for years, and now it's gone. That's sinat chinam, which means who said that you're right? Who said you could be victorious? Which means the actions of the zealots caused Jerusalem to fall. It could be, that had they acted differently, or there weren't zealots, because it seems to be that was exactly what the Romans wanted to do, was to attack them. And I'll say it again. You know, it's sometimes, I don't know if this is true, in America we had a term, playing Monday morning quarterback. Does anybody still want to play Monday morning quarterback on Yochim and Zakkai? Did he make the right decision? Did he make the wrong decision? Is it that it really would have been a better idea to fight the Romans that would not have been victorious? Maybe a better idea would have been to wait a little bit more, perhaps. But we see Rav Yochanan Zakkai goes, and we see, again, he's smuggled out on a coffin. We see that he goes, and he speaks to the Romans, and he ends up saving what he calls a little bit. So I want, again, to point out, this story is told in different ways. In this way that it was told, he doesn't ask. But Medrash Rabbah of Eicha, which really is a book that we should be spending all day with, in Medrash Rabbah in Eicha, in source number 3, we find the following: Amr le Aspisianus, that's the Hebrew name, le Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, sha'ali she'la va'ana aved. Go, ask for whatever you want and I'll do it. Go, make your wish, it's yours. Amr le, anaboy detirpe hadam midinta v'tezalach, I want you to leave this country alone and get lost. Go. Move on. Go someplace else. Which means, according to Eicha Rabbah, he does ask for Jerusalem. Amr le, he answers, Klum amlichuni b'nei Romi denirfei lahad demidinta. He goes, the reason I was chosen was in order to get rid of this particular country, to get rid of Israel. Sha'ali sha'alta va'ana avid. Go ask me another question or another request, and then I'll do it. And it's interesting because according to this version, he doesn't necessarily ask for the same thing. He says, leave opened one side, the western side or wall, or leave one side for people to escape and lead the path to Lud. So let me explain exactly what we read just now, and let me explain what's going on. First of all, there are two ways of reading our sources. One way to read our sources is that they contradict one another. When I say they contradict one another, because clearly one source said go to Lud, and the other one says please can I have Yavne. The other possibility, and by the way, in academic articles one can see this discussed. If anybody really wants, I can make suggestions what to read. But it's possible that they're not different at all. It's possible that that was the path, the road, the direction that he said to leave open, and it doesn't necessarily mean that these are two different things. The other thing, which I think is fascinating, is in the first source, he almost asked for Jerusalem, but he didn't get that far. And he was cut off before he went there. And he says, no, I have to, you know, get rid of the serpent. And he understood, the Roman understood, that Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai wanted to save Jerusalem. So therefore, I'm not exactly sure, you know, to what extent these things contradict or they articulate different elements. Or listen, it's completely possible to say, in the Bavli, which we do look as being the most authoritative, in the Bavli he's attacked either by Rabbi Yosef or Rabbi Akiva. And especially Rabbi Akiva's attack is interesting to us. This is Rabbi Akiva who supports Bar Kokhba. This is Rabbi Akiva who supports a rebellion against the Romans. This is Rabbi Akiva who, even though the chances of success seem minimal, he's willing to take that chance. And he turns around to Yochanan Zakkai and says, excuse me, I think you made a mistake over here. So maybe the fact that, you know, one of the possible people attacking him is Rabbi Akiva, that does make it quite interesting. There's another source or two that speak about this, which is in Avot Rabbi Natan, and in Avot Rabbi Natan, again, it's the emphasis is a little different. Here, again, let me just give a little bit of the background, because the background I think is going to help us understand the problem. It's on the Mishnah and Avot, source number 4. It's on the Mishnah and Avot that says that Shimon HaTzadik, who himself has a Kohen Gadol, Hoy Meshari Anshe Knesset Agdola, Ya Omer Shlosha Dvirma Olam Omed, Ala Torah Va'al Avodah Va'Gimil Chasadim. That the world stands on Torah Avodah Gimil Chasadim. Avodah in this case means the service in the Beit HaMikdash. In the next line, the Gemara, the Avot Rabbi Natan says, Avodah Ketzad, Kol Zman Shavodat Beit HaMikdash Kayemet Olamit Barechet. And it says, as long as there is a temple, the world is blessed. Now, we can imagine a problem that we can have with this. Pamachad, Hayu Rabbi Yochman Zaka Yotze Mi Yerushalayim, V'Yub Yeshua Holech Acharav. So once Rabbi Yochman Zaka, who of course is our main protagonist today, and he's accompanied by Yeshua, who had once accompanied him out when he was in a coffin. V'Ra Beit HaMikdash Charav, and they see the temple is destroyed. Om Rav Yeshua, Oyed Lanu, Al Zeh Shehu Charav, Makom Shemichaprim Bo Avinoteim Shel Yisrael. The place which is destroyed is the place that brings about forgiveness for the people. Omer Lei, B'ni, my son, Al Yirelecha, don't take it so hard. Yesh Lanu Kapara, Achad Shehi Kemota. We have another thing that brings about atonement just like it, in the same way. Ve'ezezen, what's that? Gemilat chasadim, when we're nice to one another. Shenemar ki chesed chafatzti v'lo zavach. So this is fascinating. Because, you know, the temple, as we said, is destroyed because of sinat chinam. Rav Yochman Zakkai, who had to make that choice, and essentially, if we understand the choice, he decided to sacrifice Jerusalem, to sacrifice the Beit HaMikdash in order to make sure that the Jewish people survive. Now that itself is something which is difficult, because if the Beit HaMikdash is so important, can we live without it? And Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai's response is, of course we can live without it. We have other things. The world lives on three things: Torah, Avodah, Gemil Chasadim. By the way, it's interesting, because when he says, give me Yavne, and the way that we understand that, V'chachameha, what we understand from that is he's saying, you know, we need the Torah, give me the place where the Torah is. At the very end of that source, it goes on and it tells us in this context about how Jerusalem was destroyed and how he snuck out and how he meets the Roman dignitary. And at the end, Amar lo, Atahu Rabbi Yochman Zakkai, Sha'alma aten lecha. Ask for me whatever you want. Omer lo, eini mevakesh b'mcha eli Yavne. The only thing I want is Yavne. She'elech ve'eshaneba l'talmidai. I'm going to go there. I'm going to continue. I'll teach my students. So again, Yavne v'chachameha is a little different in this source. Ve'ekvaba tefila. And here is a place that I'm going to establish prayer. Ve'seba kol mitzvot. And here we'll do all of the mitzvot. And again, this is interesting within the context, specifically, of the temple being destroyed, the temple that brings us atonement. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, one could say that the way that he faces the destruction is A, let's save what we can, and B, and I don't know how far to push this, I'm not going to say he changes Judaism, but he definitely changes the emphasis of Judaism. Because the central, or the centrality of Judaism, had been the Beit HaMikdash, certainly the place that brings us atonement, but it was really so much more. And now he says, at least in this source again, that Yavne could take its place. Yavne is a place that we can learn, and Yavne is a place that we can pray. And anybody who's sensitive to this, the issue of the prayer taking the place of the korbanot, or of the offerings, is very interesting. But of course we know in the background that there was Rabbi Tzadok, who was praying for 40 years, and he was fasting for 40 years. And we also know that there were Jews who lived in other places. There were Jews who lived in Bavel. It's not just today that there were Jews who lived in diaspora. There were Jews who didn't come back to build the second Beit HaMikdash, and they had some kind of Judaism, and it wasn't completely Beit HaMikdash centered. And there were other things that they did. But Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai accomplished, we're saying, we will now completely leave the Beit HaMikdash. We're going to leave those services, and we're going to be doing other things. There's another version of Otter Rabbi Natan, which is at the end of source number 5. It just adds a slight change there. Omrle, he goes, Sho'el ani mimcha et Yavne, I'm asking for Yavne, ve'lmod ba Torah ve'seba tzitzit. I don't know why tzitzit is, instead of mitzvot, tzitzit, ve'seba shar kol mitzvot. So it's interesting that tzitzit is emphasized. Of course, again, if I'll try in the Beit HaMikdash, the Kohen and the Kohen Gadol, they wore special garments. Maybe the tzitzit in some way in his mind taking place of the garments. And I'll say it again, I don't know exactly how far to take that. But I do want to make one other observation. And that is, I'm completely intrigued with this name of this city, which is called Yavne. And Yavne existed before. Yavne is not a new city which is built now. Yavne is mentioned already in the Navi, but just the name Yavne, Yibane, it will be built. It's as if that it's saying to me that when Yochim HaTzakai is saying, give me Yavne, he's not giving up, but he's not saying Jerusalem's going to end completely forever. He's saying, give me Yavne. We're going to do something in the middle until the time is going to come that there will be a new Beit HaMikdash, and we're going to put the temple service, as it were, in a back burner, and we're going to put the emphasis on other things, but we're not going to be abandoning our hope, and we're going to pray, and I'm going to add a little bit more. And when we pray three times a day, we're going to pray towards Jerusalem. And when we pray and when we say Birkat HaMazon, we're going to mention Jerusalem. Jerusalem is not going to be forgotten. The Mikdash is not going to be forgotten. But Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is essentially saying, let me save something. If my choice is between the Jewish people surviving and not, and going to a war to the very end versus saving something, I'm going to save something. And obviously there are those, you know, I imagine this as well, his younger, you know, nephew, who's young and idealistic, and the world was black and white, and we need to fight to the death, and the elderly, Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, is saying, you know, okay, ideology, idealism is wonderful, but nonetheless, we need to survive as a people. However, in source number 6, the Gemara tells us, there's a Gemara in Brachot, and we're not sure what to do with it. Ukeshechala Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, nichnusu tamidav levakra. When Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was sick, and the Gemara, Kishachala, I'm afraid to say 100%, but I think it's 100%. It always means the person's going to die. It doesn't mean they didn't feel well that day. Kishachala means it's towards the end. Ukishachala Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai nichnusu talmidav levakro. Kevin Shirao talmid chil levkot. When he saw his students, he started to cry. Amrilo talmidav, near Yisrael, the light of Israel. Amud yimani, the right amud, pillar. Patish HaChazak, the powerful hammer. It's interesting that some of these are almost military. You'd expect Yehuda the Maccabee. Patish HaChazak. Nimata Boche, why are you crying? Amar lehem ilu lefnei melech basar v'adam hayu molchim oti. If I was about to face a king who's of flesh and blood, Shayom kan u'machar bekever. Today is alive and tomorrow is dead. And I just want to pause there for a second. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai did once face a melech who was basar v'adam. Is that in the background of his mind over here? Shim ko esalai in ka aso ka asalam. And if I face such a king, his anger is not forever. Ve'mosreini, and if he arrests me, ein nisro yisro olam, it's not forever. Ve'imi miteini, and if he kills me, ein mitato mitato olam, it's not forever. Ve'niachol afayso b'dvarim, and I can say nice things to him, and I can placate him. U'lashachto b'mamon, and I can bribe him. Afa pichen ayiti bochen, nonetheless, if that were the case, I would cry. And now I'm about to be taken in front of God. And it's interesting, because right before he met the Roman dignitary, he was actually carried out in a coffin. And maybe there's a trigger over here in terms of him about to die, remembering that previous scene. I can't prove that that's what's going on in his mind, but I strongly suspect it, and I'm not the first. There are various others who have already made this association between the most famous moment in Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's life and this final moment of his life, when he made a decision which was pivotal for the Jewish people of his age and for future generations, and the last moment of his life. And he says, if I was about to face God, Shehu chai v'kayam l'olam, ulamei olamim, she'im ko'es alai ka'aso ka'asolam, and if he's angry with me, it's for eternity. V'mosreini, and if he imprisons me, Yisro Yisro Olam, imprisonment is for eternity. V'im yitenu mitato mitato olam, and if I die, it is a permanent death. V'ein yachol lefayso b'dvarim, and there's nothing I can say to placate. V'lo l'shechto b'mamon, and there's no money in the world that one can bribe God. V'lo od, and not only that, And now he says something which is incredibly frightening. Elishayesh lefanai shnei drachim. It's as if he sees in front of him two paths. Echad shel gan eden v'shad echad shel gehinom. One to gan eden and the other, one to heaven, one to hell, if you will. Ve'eini yodeya be'ezu moluchinoti. And I don't know which one I'm going to be brought with path. I'm going to be brought down. I don't know where I'm going. So we do have to stop there for a moment. If Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai, Rabban Yochanan ben Zakkai, the leader of the Jewish people in one of the most difficult eras, who saves Judaism, who saves the Jews. Now, of course, some can say, he didn't save Judaism. He forfeited Judaism to save the Jews. He changed Judaism. You know, believe me, if anybody alive today were to make the changes that he made, going from a temple-based to a non-temple-based, and say, listen, I think we should make these changes. It's very hard to believe they'd get away with it. But this is Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. But now he's standing here, going back, and perhaps playing in his mind exactly the way that he was attacked by either Rabbi Yossi or Rabbi Akiva, and saying to himself, did I make the right choice? Did I ask for too little? Could have I asked for more? And maybe once we start to question ourselves, maybe he never should have left Jerusalem in the first place. Maybe he should have encouraged those young, idealistic people, to warriors, to fight. Maybe we could have frightened away the Romans. Maybe if we would have made them suffer a little bit, they would have left. Which means, again, you play this Monday morning quarterback, you start to question, and you say, hold it. Did I do the most glorious thing of my entire life? Or did I make the biggest mistake of my life, and maybe one of the biggest mistakes of any Jewish leader in history? And I think there's something very important about this. You know, there's this concept of cheshbon nefesh. Don't worry, it's only Tisha B'Av now. We generally wait until Elul. Most people don't even like Elul so much. You wait to Erev Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Hashanah, Erev Yom Kippur. You know, why waste so much time? Ne'ilah. Ne'ilah is enough time to be serious. And we start thinking, we do a cheshbon nefesh. Have I done everything the way that I need to do it? Have I made mistakes? Do I need to do more? Did I need to do more? And I think that very often when we do these kinds of things, when we do a cheshbon nefesh, what we tend to do is we tend to ask, you know, about little things, like, you know, or question ourselves. You know, maybe I didn't say Asher Yatzar with enough kavana when I went to the bathroom before Ne'ilah. Maybe that's what I need to fix in my life. But when it comes to big things, how can we even question? This is who we are. We can't question. Which means, like, the bigger questions, I don't know, is this color yarmulke the right color that I should wear? Is this the kind of Jew that I should be? Is my ideology correct? And my answer to that is yes. But do I ever question those things? Am I supposed to question those things? Maybe I should be wearing a big black hat, or maybe that's the, maybe I should grow a long white beard. It's the only way that I would get respect anyway. Maybe the bigger things, and please, it's not the beard and not the color of the kippah, but for some people it is. Maybe the bigger things in terms of ideology, what we need to change is the whole direction of my life, what I believe, that I left America and I believe the Jews should live in Israel, and I built my family and my home and my career over here in Israel because this is what I thought is important. So maybe that was a mistake. Maybe there are other ways. Maybe that's not the most important thing. Which means I'm saying a cheshbon nefesh is not about the little things in life only. A cheshbon nefesh has to be about the bigger things. And God willing, we question and we go and we torture ourselves, and then we come to the conclusion, I'm absolutely right in the choices that I made, and I'm going to try to do it even better. That's what a cheshbon nefesh should be. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai is right here on his deathbed, questioning himself, the very core of his being, in terms, am I going to heaven, am I going to hell? It's not more stark than that. This is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, who spent his entire life teaching and leading the Jewish people. Why in the world would he think that he's going to hell, unless he thinks he's made some unbelievable mistakes along the way? Unless the attack that Rabbi Akiva has asked on him, and we have no reason to believe they've even met, but the attack that Rabbi Akiva has put on him is something which he didn't have to wait for Rabbi Akiva to say this. It's something which was going on and gnawing at him day after day after day. Did I make a mistake? Is this really the right choice? Is life without Jerusalem, was this really what I should have chosen? And maybe part of mourning for Jerusalem is also asking that question every single day. Is this really what we should have done? This is really the way that it was supposed to be. But the Gemara continues, and I think that the continuation is absolutely fascinating. He goes on, and he says, I'm not going to cry. Amru lo, the students then say, Rabbeinu, Borcheinu, bless us. Amar lahem, and he gives him a strange, strange blessing. Yiratzon she'morah shamayim alechem k'morah basavadayim. May you fear God the same way that you fear other people, which is wonderful, because most people will make believe they fear God more. B'shat petirato, in the moment of his death, Amar lahem, he says to them, Pnu kelim b'pnei hatum'ah. Make sure that you take away the utensils because they're about to become tameh. Which tum'ah? Which impurity is going to be there? His own dead body. He says, Tum'ah is about to come into this room. Make sure. You know, there's something very interesting about that. You know, the laws of Tum'ah and Tara on this particular point, without the Beit HaMikdash, is a custom, is things that they do, but it's not with the same significance. Unless he really believes the Beit HaMikdash could really come back at any point, and he's been holding that, you know, really putting us in a position that we survive, that it can come back. Why do we keep the laws of Tum'ah and Tahara still in the time of Yochanan Zakkai? And by the way, during his time, he made sure that people would know these laws. They didn't just erase them and forget about them. Okay, we don't have to study them. And it's not just study. That's at the moment of death. And then he says one last thing. V'chinu kisei v'chizkiyahu melech Yudah sheba. And he said, bring in. Now, literally, it means a chair. But I can't help but wonder if perhaps it means a throne. Because Chizkiyahu, the king of Yehuda, is about to come. Now, if we pay attention very carefully with what he just now said, I think there's something that we can understand in terms of what it was that he was really saying, or what it was that he really saw at that moment, or what it was that he really understood. So I want to go back for a moment. Before, when he was offered, and he asked for three things. So the most famous one, of course, is Yavne. But that wasn't the only thing. If we go back and we look at his words again, there were three things that he asked for. I guess wishes always come in three. Ten li Yavne v'chachameha. Visholishta de Rabban Gamliel. Now, how do we translate that? It's the royal family of Rabban Gamliel. And he also wants Rabbi Tzadok. So now, these three things actually, in my mind, represent something. But let me pause for a moment. I'm going to go back and I'm going to ask this question. Why is Chizkiyah the one that he sees? Chizkiyah Melech Yehuda. Why of all people is he the one who suddenly appears? And I'll tell you the truth, the commentaries have a hard time trying to figure that out. I just want to mention, I'm not going to read it so much, in source number 7, the Alei Tamar, Rabbi Tamar lived in Tel Aviv. He tells over the story, and he writes, again, among others, he writes, Vishamati b'shem gadol echad, b'tosefet nofach mishali. He says, and I heard from someone, I'm going to add a little bit to this of my own, what I suggested before, that he's going through that moment when he asked for Jerusalem. The very end, Rav Tamar writes, V'achin gam hayon omdim she'elot ke'ilu ala perek. Today, in Tel Aviv, in Israel, after 1948, and we need to study this kind of solution. Shitachin shel chata ba'ad kol tzad nirash gan eden u'chalila gehinom, and where there's questions today, where the implications of our answers could take us either to heaven or to hell. V'hamirachem ala aretz, and may he who has compassion on the land of Israel, v'bocher ba'mo Yisrael ba'ahava, and he who has chosen the people of Israel with love, yadrichenu b'derech amet. Amen. May he give us understanding and lead us in the proper path. Amen. And it's fascinating because as he's reading this passage, that's where it took him. The Korban Eda, source number 8, one of the commentaries on the Rishalmi says, oh, Chizkiyahu, because Rabbi Yochanan and Ben Zakkai and Chizkiyahu, they both taught Torah. And And you have to be a little disappointed with the answer. The reason why I say that, because essentially it could have been any rabbi in history, could have been the one that he sees right then. Oh, he also taught Torah. So you see that he's trying, but there's not just it. The Tzlach, the Node Yehuda, this is his commentary to the Gemara, Tzion Lenefesh Chaya. He wrote his Shelot and Tshuvot. He mentioned his father's name. His name was Rabbi Yecheskel Landau. His Shelot and Tshuvot are Node Yehuda. His father was Yehuda. The Tzlach is Tzion Lenefesh Chaya. Chaya was his mother. And he writes in source number 9, V'chinuk yisei l'chizkiyahu melech Yehuda, nir l'fi ani da'atei. It seems to me, Shabbat l'krota melech mimalchei Beit David. A king is coming from the Davidic family. So let's just now pay attention a little bit to what he's saying. He goes one more line, which is important to us. Lefisha Hillel Haya Mizera David. And we'll skip a little bit. Umiyom Shekibel Hillel Anisiyut Lo Pasak Mizaro. And from the moment that Hillel became the Nasi, and he's from the Davidic family, it never stopped. Vamnam, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel Neherag, Basar Rugi Malchut. One of Hillel's descendants, Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, was killed. Now, the Tzlach and others will understand that he was the one who was killed, the one that was killed when the Beit HaMikdash still stood. The part of the problem is the names keep repeating themselves. Rav Shimon ben Gamliel, Rabbi Gamliel, Rabbi Yehuda, and the names keep repeating. Ubeno Rabbi Gamliel, Shehu Rabbi Gamliel, Diyavna, Katan Hayaz, Vikipel Rav Yoch ben Zakai, Hanesiyut. Ularot lo sha'in le David HaMelech tar'omet alav, al shekibel nesiyot velo ya mizaro. Lachin b'chizkiyah, shu me'achut Beit David l'krato. So it's fascinating. Because what he's saying is that Chizkiyah is coming because of the backstory. Part of what was taking place in Jerusalem at that time was total havoc. The Kohen Gadol was murdered. The Nasi was murdered. Rav Yochum ben Zakkai suddenly has everything on his shoulders, and he has to be the one to make the fateful decision. Just one word about Hillel. Rav Yochum ben Zakkai was Hillel's student. He was the youngest student of Hillel. This is mentioned in the Bavli and the Gemara in Sukkah, but I want to read it from the Yerushalmi in source number 10. Shmonim zug shel tamidim hayelo lehilel hazaken, gadol shem yonatan ben Uziel, vakatan shem ben Rabbi Yochum ben Zakkai. The youngest of the students was Yochum ben Zakkai. Pam achad chalav v'nichnusu kolom levakro, Hillel got sick and they all went to see him. Amad lo Yochum ben Zakkai b'chatzer, Yochum ben Zakkai, who was the youngest, thought he didn't deserve to go inside. He went, he was modest, he stayed outside. Amar lehem, Hillel looks around and says, Heichan hu akatan shebachem. Where's that youngest one of you? Shehu av lechachma v'av ledorot. Because he is actually the wisest, and he's the one who's going to be the father of the future generations. Which means it's fascinating that it seems to be that Hillel knows that he's going to be the one to take over. Source 11, the Mechilta, tells us about the murder of the Kohen Gadol and of the Nasi. And as I said, the timing is not always simple. And again, the Pnei Motion, source number 12, tells us, as we already saw from the Tzlach, from the Node Yehuda, that those who died were, in fact, or those murdered, those were the 10 martyrs. Two of them took place during temple times. Source 12, Rav Shimon ben Nasi, Rav Yishmael ben Elisha Kohen Gadol. So now you go back and you realize what just now has taken place. That Yochum ben Zakkai took upon himself to be the Nasi because the Nasi was murdered and the one who would inherit it, Rabbi Gamliel, is a young, small boy, and he knows he's not ready to take this responsibility. Instead, what Yochum ben Zakkai does is he creates a new city called Yavne, and again, this connotation of being rebuilt, and he takes with him the family of Rabbi Gamliel, which is, but he doesn't hide it. He takes the shalshelet of the Malchut Beit David. He takes the man who will be king, and he takes him out as well, and he asks for him as well. And he's going to return the kingship. Because actually now, if we pay attention to the three things that he asks for, he actually asks for a Kohen, Rav Tzadok, and the Kohen Gadol is dead, but the greatest Kohen who's there, the one who's been praying for the Jerusalem to remain for 40 years, is Rabbi Tzadok. And he takes with him as well, and he asks with him as well for Rabbi Gamliel, which means essentially this, what it really reminds us of is what Rav Shimon bar Yochai, of course the famous student of Rabbi Akiva, says in Source 14 in the Mishnah Avot, Rabbi Shimon Omer Shlosha Ketarim Heim, Keter Torah v'Keter Kohuna v'Keter Malchut, that there are three crowns in Judaism. They are Torah, and that's where Yavna, that's where Torah is going to be taught. And there's Kuna, that's Rabbi Tzadok, and there's Malchut, and that's the family of Rabbi Gamliel. And now again, we keep in mind that a real king then shows up to greet him and perhaps take him by hand to Gan Eden. But I want to go back to Rabbi Tzadok for a second. Why was Rabbi Tzadok praying for 40 years? So there's a story you all know, but there just may be one element that you're missing, and that is, who is the protagonist? And that's Source 15, the Gemara in Yoma. There were two Kohanim and they were running, and they climb up to the altar. When one got there first, and he stabs and he kills the other person. A Kohen kills a Kohen because he wants to serve God, right? Fear people, right? Fear God as much as you fear people. Here, what can I say? They don't fear people, they don't fear God. Amad Rabbi Tzadok Amalot Ulam. Rabbi Tzadok was the Kohen who was there on duty and he was watching this take place. And he's the one who starts talking about the idea of the Beit HaMikdash becoming, you know, full of bloodshed. Do we bring in Egel Erufa? Who's responsible for this? How can we possibly change things? And it may be my imagination, but I would assume that this story took place 40 years before the destruction. I would assume that for the next 40 years, Rabbi Tzadok is the one who's praying that the Beit HaMikdash somehow survive. But he knows, how can this place survive? By the way, it's interesting, in the same Gemara, it's just, it says, Ba Aviv Shel Tinok, Matzok Shum Epaper, the father sees his alive Amar, Reu Kaparetchem, let his death be some kind of an atonement. I'm just skipping on. V'cheinu Omer, and it also says v'gam naki shafach Menashe harbe ma'od, and Menashe also spilled a lot of blood. It's very strange what that verse is doing in the very middle of the story. Amad Rabbi Tzadok amalot ulam barabayit, and Rabbi Tzadok gets up and he continues his speech about the Egla Rufa, who is responsible over here. What was Menashe doing here? And Menashe spilled a great deal of blood. So I'm going to have to remind you also who Menashe is, because sometimes minor characters enter into stories and we're not exactly sure what they're doing over there. I will mention that there's another Gemara in Yoma which you don't have in front of you, which is Yoma Daf Lamed Tet Amid Bet. It says, Tanu Rabbanan, our rabbis taught, Arba'im Shana Kodim Churban Habayit, 40 years before the Churban took place, which again, if I'm right, this is the same time that Kohen's killing a Kohen, and Rabbi Tzadok starts praying, Lo Yagorelo Lebiyamin, no longer when they would do Achad LaHashem, Achad Azazel, would the right one come up in the right hand. Lo Yalashon Shel Zehorit Milabin, and no longer did the miraculous things take place where this string turned white. V'loya ma'aravi dolek, and then the candle was no longer lit, miraculously. V'yu delatot eichel neftachot meleim, and the doors would open up by themselves. Ad shega'ar b'hem Rabbi Yochum ben Zakkai, 40 years before Rabbi Yochum ben Zakkai, yells at the walls of the Beit HaMikdash, V'omilar heichel heichel, v'matem av ite atzmecha, why are you opening yourself up? And he understood, Yodea ani b'cha shesovcha atid l'charev, I know that you're going to be destroyed. 40 years before, Rabbi Yochum ben Zakkai, Rabbi Tzadok, they know that the end is upon them. By the way, Rabbi Tzadok is in total denial and prays for it to remain. The Kohen, the one who serves God, and Rabbi Yochum ben Zakkai, he knows the day is coming. He knows it's going to happen. And now the question is, how do you deal when you know that destruction is going to take place? Do you deny it and say we can change? Or do you accept it and say, let us at least try to save whatever it is that we can save? See, what's interesting about all of this is I mentioned Menashe before. Who exactly was Menashe? Menashe was a king of Israel. Who was Menashe's father? Well, his father, by the way, was a man named Chizkiah. The Gemara tells us in source, we could look at 16, וגם דם נקי שפך מן השהר בי מאוד, עד שמילא את ירושלים פה לפה. Which means we're getting very close to the end of the first Beit HaMikdash, because Jerusalem is full of blood. And who is the one who does this? It's Menashe. Source 17, Vayishkav Chizkiyahu Avotav Yimloch Menashe Beno Tachtav, just in case you weren't sure. The Gemara tells us that Chizkiyahu got very, very sick. And he was going to die. And Yishayahu Anavi comes and speaks to him. And Yeshua says, the reason you're going to die is because you refuse to have children. And Chizkiyah says, I'm afraid, because I understand from Ruach HaKodesh, the child I'm going to have is going to be someone like Menashe. And he says, nonetheless, that's not your business. You do what you can do. Or you save what you can save. You do the minimum, you do whatever it is that you can. And you let certain things be in God's hand. It's very interesting, therefore, that of all the people, the one who comes to visit Rav Yochanan Zakkai is Chizkiyah. And as I said, I think that there's more than one way to look at this. One way to look at this is that Chizkiyah, he was from Malchut Beit David. And therefore he's saying, thank you for saving Rabbi Gamliel. And I understand you didn't just want to take the Nisi'ut for yourself. The other way is to say, I also had a difficult part of my life. I also saw Jerusalem become a city of blood. And I also had a very difficult time knowing what the proper choice is going to be. The Gemara tells us that there was a possibility of Chizkiyahu even being Mashiach. But it didn't happen. Again, an opportunity. It doesn't take place. The mystical sources, if you want, you can look in source 21 further. It says that Chizkiyah and Yochim and Zakkai shared on a certain level. They shared a soul. But what I want to do is I just want to go back towards a couple more verses in Yeshayahu, source 23 and then 24, which follow one another. Source 23, we're told, Be'eta hi shalach marduch baladan ben baladan melech bavel svimuncha el Chizkiyahu. Chizkiyahu sees a number of things in his life which really are miraculous. I just want to skip a little bit more over here. V'yavo Yeshayahu navi al melech Chizkiyahu v'yomei lev ma'am ru'an Hashem e'ele me'yan yavo e'lecha v'yomei Chizkiyahu me'eretz chukha bo e'lai mi bavel. And he shows them everything. He shows them the kelim as well. And he's told, the temple's going to be destroyed. This is all going to come to an end. And part of this, again, tragedy, and I just need to make sure that I explain this properly. Chizkiyahu stood, and there were two paths in front of him. There was a possibility to be Mashiach. And instead, what comes off from Chizkiyahu is a son, Menashe, who ends up causing, I'm not going to say as much as anybody, but probably as much as anybody else, who causes Jerusalem to become a place full of blood and causes destruction. Chizkiyahu was somebody who would have preferred to stay away from having to make this kind of a choice. But he was forced. And it was Yeshayahu who comes and tells him, if you don't have children and you don't continue, God is going to kill you now, and that's going to be the end right now. Really, it would have been the end of Malchut Beit David right then. But Malchut Beit David is going to continue in the most ironic way through Menashe. And that's what's really interesting. But there's going to be a Churban. Which means that what Chizkiyah lives through is the torture of knowing that somehow that the choices that he makes are going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash, and he's told, you don't have a choice on this. Certain things are in God's hand. Certain things have to take place. And as Yeshayahu tells him that there are choices that you've made that were wrong as well, and Chizkiyahu is a righteous king, your children, there's going to be destruction. People are going to be carried off into Bavel. But I also want to point out what is the chapter which is immediately after that chapter, when chapter 39 ends. It's Nachamu Nachamu Ami Yomar Elokeichem. Dabru Alev Yushalayim V'Krileah, and so on and so forth. And we know exactly what Nachamu Nachamu is. Which means that there are processes which take place which we don't always understand. There are processes which take place which are sometimes much bigger than us. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was somebody who, because of him, Jerusalem will be destroyed, because of his children, grandchildren, and so on. And maybe some of his actions, and he's a righteous man, a righteous king who does good. He's the one who comes and greets Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai and says, I understand what it's like when choices are very, very difficult. I understand what it's like when it seems that whatever choice you make, people will attack you for the rest of history. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai would have chosen to stay and to fight, and there would have been a bloodbath. He would have had that responsibility. Yes, there would have been some who would have been very, very happy because of Jewish pride and so on and so forth, but it would have been a bloodbath, and he would have had that responsibility. Doing nothing, which is sometimes a choice as well, is one that he can no longer do because of his nephew, who decided to burn down all the food, so that was now no longer a choice, and maybe that had ultimately would have been the best choice, was to wait and see and not to make a choice. In the end, he said, let me at least save something. And he's attacked for not asking for Jerusalem, unless, of course, he asked for Jerusalem. He's attacked for not saying those words. And even in the Bavli, it sounds like he's about to get there. And he says, there was another way to do this. You can just take out the snake, but they don't let him say those words. And maybe for the rest of his life, he deals with this pain and he deals with the implications of his choice. But let's pay attention to what he did do. He asked for three things. He asked for Yavne, so the Torah can go on as something which is living. So the Torah is going to be alive, it's going to be dynamic, it's going to be applied to new situations, and there may never have been as many dramatic new situations as now dealing with life without a temple, which will now last for 2,000 years. And the Judaism that we have is to a great deal because of the choices that Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made. But that were not his own. It wasn't just about Yavne. He also asks for Malchut. He also asks for Rami Gamliel. He also asks for Rabbi Tzadok. And I'll say it again. It's possible that Rabbi Tzadok also had this premonition, also knew that the end was coming, and refused to accept it, and fasts and prays for the next 40 years. And Rav Yochanan, for the next 40 years, knows it's coming. He knows that it's going to be destroyed. He sees all the miracles are stopped. He sees the Kohen Gadol is killed. He sees is murdered. He sees that the Nasi is murdered. He sees everything falling around him. And he says, yeah, we can fight to the death. We can do nothing. Or we can save what we can. And Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai made that choice to save what he can. Was he comfortable with it? Not at all. He tortured himself the rest of his life. But it's interesting. The last things that he says is this kli may have tum'ah to it. Make sure, because there's tum'ah coming. He's still concerned with the holiness of the Beit HaMikdash to his very last breath. Again, those things that we thought he abandoned. What is it that we thought he did? We thought he abandoned the Beit HaMikdash, and we thought that he abandoned really Yerushalayim and Malchut Beit David, and he didn't. He asked for Rabbi Tzadok, for that holy Kohen, and he asked for Rabbi Gamliel, the man who's going to be Nasi. He doesn't only ask for Yavne. And his inner world, the thing which occupies him in the very last breath that he takes, is this concern about tum'ah, this remnant of the Beit HaMikdash, which he really does believe is going to come back, and Malchut Beit David, which he believes will come back again. And that's the beauty of the story, is at the very end, the last person that he sees, when no one else in the room sees him, he says, don't you see it? Malchut Beit David is here. Aben David just walked in. Chizkiyahu is here. Prepare the throne. And that prepared the throne is saying we need to have hope, because Malchut Beit David is going to come back. The Beit HaMikdash is going to come back. We need to remember and to keep learning the laws of Tumah and Tahara. It's going to come back. Yes, I made a choice, and maybe I made a mistake, but I never gave up. And I know that just like God destroyed the Beit HaMikdash, it's going to come back. And learn the laws of Tumah and Tahara, and keep an eye out because the throne, get it ready, because the Amelech, Ben David, is about to walk into the room. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan Zakkai leaves us with. And we realize these were the things that were part of him as he left Jerusalem with a broken heart, and he tortured himself the rest of his life. But we're here today, and we're back in Yerushalayim today, and Jerusalem is the center and has been the center of our prayers for 2,000 years because of Yochanan Zakkai. And maybe it's easy to attack, and maybe it's easy to say I would have done differently. But instead, we should embrace the hope that even that last moment, he still says, Beit HaMikdash is going to be rebuilt, and get ready for the Kiseh, because the Ben David is going to come. B'mehirah b'yameinu. Amen. Amen.